Hey, what's up, guys? This is Lucas Burnley. You are listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. I'm here with my co-host TJ Schwartz, and dude, I think we have a banger today.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you and I are actually hunting right now, and these are our AI replicants.
Ah, it's
So,
good. It's good. It's like a Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey vibe.
yeah, no, just kidding. But we might talk about AI.
Dude, we haven't even used AI on the pod at all. This is an interesting time for learning because the methods of learning, I feel like, have changed. Or just the tools and resources. Like, obviously, that's like a huge, obvious statement. We have the internet. That is transformative. But we have a use case that just happened that I think is going to be pretty interesting. All of that said, on this podcast, we talk about knives, knife making, manufacturing, running small businesses, families, and everything that goes along with it. With everything going on in the world today, we should have a good show.
Yeah, no kidding.
Where should we start, man?
Let's hear about your Haas situation.
Okay, we're just gonna dive right into it. Okay, so I have a Haas TM1P from 2007. Okay, that machine shipped with a floppy drive. The workaround is to use a floppy emulator, which gives you a USB port. Okay, over the years, it's been pretty stable. There's been a few times where it kind of just stopped working. The last time was in January, and I got it in my head that it was actually, I'm like, the emulator has to have died. The USB sticks with like known programs aren't loading, all of these issues. I swap the emulator and it works. The hardest thing about this is it's always been intermittent, and no one's really been able to tell me, why would it accept a program one time but not the next time, right? Or fail to like recognize a program. About 2 weeks ago, on one day, my surface grinder motor burned out and my Haas went down. This is like catastrophic. Okay. Last night, I used ChatGPT to problem solve the issue with my emulator that no one else has been able to solve. And it's basically blowing my mind.
The ability for AI to understand code and write code and interpret, abnormalities in all sorts of computer programming situations is seems like its strongest use case, as opposed outside of just like having fun with it. So yeah, good call to even ask.
Well, in this dude, this the solution turned out to not be a coding issue, but it worked through a series of steps that included creating a custom post processor. Okay, so just to back up a little bit, basically, all of a sudden, I go to load a program. I had just loaded a program. So I'm working on the Kihoku. Okay. So I've got ops 1 through 3 loaded and they're running. Okay. I go to load op 4. It just doesn't recognize the program. There's nothing there. It says file not found. Okay. That's it. I go look at my USB stick. It's there. I go back to the machine. It's not there. Okay. So I call Haas. I've been in like a Haas Tech Facebook group, and people had me run through a series of checks, like make sure the USB sticks are formatted correctly. Well, they are formatted correctly because they were working 15 minutes ago or 2 weeks ago, right? Okay. My thought goes to Fusion 360. I'm like, this is the only known variable. There's been an update. The post processor for pre-next generation controls has stopped working. And now it's just not, something has changed. I try to find anything I can online. Nothing. Okay. Found one thing around like maybe like a high speed feed tr or travel parameter or something. Change that. Okay. Nothing. So by the time I take this to Chat GPT, it is 7 o'clock last night. And I'm bang. I mean, my machine's been down for 2 weeks. I'm losing tons of money. Blade show's coming up. Like, I'm freaking out. Right. And no one has a solution. Chat starts having me work through a process of inspection. And right before I went to chat, I pulled a really old USB and I was able to load an old NCF file. Okay. So like a Quicken file or something like that from 5 years ago. And I was like, all right, well, if that's working, it's not the emulator. So I basically upload the file, the working file to chat, and a non-working file to chat. And it starts to break down the differences. File
Wow.
extensions. It starts to be like, hey, the tool names are longer here. The format for this, and it picked up right away. It was like, oh, this is a Mastercam file. Like, oh, this, okay, we're here. I'm trying to figure out, like, it's looking to see if there's been updates, right? It feels, and this is the thing, right? Like, it has a human element because we're humans and it works better for us. Okay, so it's really conversational about how it's doing it. I felt like I was online with a very knowledgeable tech that's like, all right, let me work through this, upload the file, I'm gonna scan these, we're gonna check it out. It got me to where I had a test file that would upload. It's still from there, it still wouldn't load my other files. And we went back and forth and back and forth. And so at some point, it was like, maybe the post processor has an issue. Let's format the post processor like this, go still an error. So as we're doing this, like it's not like it just had an answer. It's not like it solved it immediately. Okay. And it, in a way, it almost felt like therapy, where like as it was coming up with options, I am also seeing
Yeah. It's
some
like
type of option.
you're collaborating with it in a way.
100%, right? Like we're
Yeah.
feeding off of each other, which is insane. Okay. I'm like, ooh, that's a good idea. All right, let me try this. Okay, let's compare these two. Or let's try this, but actually only adapt like this one sequence, right? At the end, the basic conclusion it came up with was like USB drives formatted as floppies are unstable. It basically said that like just with use, it can change, like they can become corrupted. And so at the end of the night, I was able to load an unmodified program onto a USB and have the machine recognize it. And I ran a part.
Dang.
Okay. Now, at the end of all of that, it was an unmodified program. But I had tried everything up until that point to get something to work, and it would not take anything. The differences were it had me modify the naming parameters. And in the past, I had different naming parameters. So there is a very real possibility that some type of update in Fusion affected the way that something in the post processor was working.
Can I ask, when you name programs, when you post them out, do you just use numbers?
So this is the thing. In the past, I haven't. So in the past, I'll use like weird stuff like KOP1 or Kihoku Op1. Okay. The file that I ended up with last night was 0010001.nc, which is like the file name.
Yeah, no letters in it.
No letters in it. What do you do?
So I have heard that some machines are sensitive about any letters in the name.
Yeah. Oh, it does have a letter because it has an O. So,
Oh,
and
it's it.
I don't know how that translates, but like in the past, I would have been able to just do like 1001.nc and have it load. This now doesn't seem like that's the case. I have to have like the file name named exactly correctly for it to see it.
Interesting.
But with chat, it's basically saying like that it could be a USB issue completely, and it can change. And then at the end of all this, dude, it was like, hey, I can write you a custom script so that you can run any post, and it'll just clean it up like a JavaScript. I have no experience coding. I explained that. It gave me a very simple instruction process to how I can, download Java, how to set up my file, and then how to run the actual cleaner. Dude, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah,
My
that's
knowledge base inside of 3 hours has grown so exponentially around potential causes, potential solutions, a general understanding of just what to look for. I
It's
mean,
like it's an ability to do effectively t a collaborative tutorial on really anything is seems like an amazing use case. That's
it
cool.
is, it's all, I love it because it's in the questions that you ask and how you structure those
Yeah,
questions.
for sure.
And that's real life. Like how you ask is often as important, if not more important, than what you ask,
All right.
right? Like in our dealings day to day or like in business, wouldn't you say that's true?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So this is like conversational, man. It was such a relief at the end of the night, but also it was crazy because I'm like, what does that make obsolete? Yeah, I when
All right.
before we jumped on, I was like, in a weird way, like every time I use it for something that's like super effective, I feel like I'm doing a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Because I'm asking this source where I'm like, I don't truly understand it for advice, feedback, method, and it's providing it.
Right.
Dude, that's weird.
It is. It is. And I barely have used it. When it first came out, I was messing around with it, but there is one use case I was really hoping to use it for that I need to. When Wix exports all of our weekly orders, custom orders, it columnizes them in terms of handle, blade finish, hardware, sheath, left hand, right hand. So on like some knives, that's a pretty long row of columns because it's got like the Overland has all of the possible drop downs. But then someone else will order like a set of scales, and that only has one option. What kind of scale is it? And so all those columns, it isn't smart enough to output them where all the handle scales are in the same column and all the blade finishes are in the same column. Like different things with different options don't line up in the columns because it's just option one, option two, option three. And so I kind of have to manually like move things into their respective columns so that you can actually read it. And I was kind of thinking about just throwing one of those at GPT and saying, hey, write me a little thing that just everything that looks like a handle scale material, put it in a column and don't jumble them in order, but just move them left to right. And same with all the other columns. That it is a pain. It's actually surprisingly difficult to do that by hand. And
So
so I'm
there you go, dude. Just
yeah.
try it. Just
Yeah.
try it. We so far we've only, I use it in a limited sense. And again, a lot of times I just need like a feedback, right? And so I'm looking for a best practice. I use it a lot for like, I think I talked about a while back. I was like, hey, I don't have a traditional education. help me come, I have ADHD, help me come up with like a reading list and a methodology of like reading
Yeah.
that is going to help me get through this. Things like that, where it's
And
like, that's just for fun.
just kind of, and also kind of like just a brainstorming kind of
Yeah.
assistant in a way. Yeah.
I recently did it around languages. I was like, hey, I really want to like learn Spanish effectively. Here are the things that I've struggled with in the past. Here's the time that I have. Here's what I want to be able to accomplish from a, like a speaking reading standpoint. Like what would be the most effective way to get there? And again, man, it's working with it because it's like, oh, okay, for the neurodivergent brain, you have to have like the gamification. Like here's how you're gonna do this. You're gonna use these apps, this, but you also need a human component. So like, here's a great resource for, you know, native speakers, but here's how much time you should allot to it. It's not like, obviously at this point, like we don't take anything at face value, but it gives you a framework. And sometimes the framework, just the basic framework, is actually the hardest part, right? If you struggle with the right way of doing things, dude, I want to know what it comes up with for your inventory problem. But more than that, I want to see if it opens up anything else during that process.
And that's where the power really comes in, is that it's so holistic about how
Yes.
it thinks about things, which is freaky.
Dude.
So I'll have to look
I
at
kind
that.
of just want to, build like one, just like a workstation that it just actually like an oracle, like I don't know, a looking pool where you can just like talk to it and get answers. Because that, I mean, that's what it feels like. And the way, like at the end of the night, it basically, it gave me a PDF. I was like, give me a PDF summary of what we found that I can read on the podcast tomorrow. And it was like, sure, here you go. I'm going to read that. Okay. And directly after that, it was like, hey, since we're already doing this, would you like a Instagram formatted story for the podcast? Yes, I would. That from a workflow standpoint. Now it's taken it from essentially IT to advertising inside of one conversation. Dude, we're in a weird time.
That is a fact.
Yeah, man. So I'm gonna read in a minute once I find it. I'm gonna read it. Basically, this was the summary. So here's what we figured out after weeks of messing with Fusion 360, USB sticks, and an old Haas TM1P. We kept running into this weird issue where programs posted from Fusion wouldn't show up on the machine. No errors, no feedback, just file not found in the disk directory. Turns out it wasn't a G code problem. It was about how the file was saved. Fusion sometimes adds an invisible marker at the beginning of files called a BOM, a byte order mark, that combined with multiple files on a USB or leftover metadata from Mac or cloud services can cause the Haas to choke. The fix? Keep it simple. Files saved with ANSI encoding, with CRLF line endings, Windows style, and ideally alone on the USB stick. We wrote a little cleanup tool that removes the BOM, converts the file format, and makes sure your code actually shows up when you hit list. Bottom line, it's not your post processor, it's your file formatting. One invisible byte can kill your workflow.
Sounds like Bill Nye or something, or, you know what I mean? Like
Dude,
the way that ended. It's yeah.
just the way that is explained. The crazy part, again, I don't know 100% that that's true. All I know is that my machine is now accepting files.
That's all that matters. So now you're making knives. So what were you trying to make? What was the part?
Bevels.
Oh, okay.
Bevels on the Kihoku. So,
Why do you need those?
right now, man, I'm okay. So we can that's like a fun segue, actually. Okay, so when the machine died, luckily I had just finished. I had my op three loaded, which takes a Kihoku Tang all the way through the step right before beveling, and I had 50 tanks. So my options were to not run anything or just run the tanks, okay, with no bevels. So I did that. Up until yesterday, I didn't have any way to bevel, and my thought was, okay, I know the new machine is coming on the 22nd. Rigger had a crane go down, so my machine is delayed. And dude, right now, like, I'm just trying to hedge my bets, basically. As I have a machine that theoretically was working, and I have a method for doing bevels. You are going to help me set up reeve grinding, but I don't have a machine to do it. And I don't have the disc, which is 4 weeks away. And I do have Blade Show, which is not much more than 4 weeks away.
Yeah,
Okay.
no kidding.
So my plan was going to be, I was going to split the batch, send half the batch to heat treat unground in the knowledge that I will get reeve grinding up and running soon, and then keep half and just pray that I could get to a point where I could bevel them. That was why.
Yeah, totally.
So now I can bevel them and send those to heat treat. So I'm going to do basically the same plan. I'm going to send half beveled, half unbeveled. And dude, what the heck?
Finally got it figured out. I'm happy that it worked out though, for real. Downtime is like the dirtiest word in manufacturing I've found. It's like we haven't had a lot of issues with that. Fingers crossed, knock on wood, all that. But just imagining losing a machine for a couple of weeks right now is that sounds painful. So my heart goes out to you. I'm sorry that
Dude.
happened.
Well, and you're in a good position at this point because you have redundancy. Right? Dude, I have redundancy. I have five grinders,
Right.
but I don't have two CNCs. And so I have redundancy for the way that I made knives years and years ago. If a drill press goes down, I have a solution for it. If a grinder goes down, if a Fordham handpiece
Yeah.
dies, I have a solution. I've got multiple backup motors. It's a staging issue where once your workflow changes, especially when it's in that like early days, you usually don't have any type of redundancy.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and part of it's like it's hard to have redundancy when you haven't proved that the first version worked at all. So it's like
Totally.
it's not until that it not until you're fully confident that you would duplicate it, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So that's part of it. You kind of have to go through the bottleneck, if you will, where it's like I got to make this all work before I go and make it redundant and reliable.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where you're at, it seems like, in some ways. But now you have a machine coming, which is
Right.
huge, because
Huge. Now I have two mills.
if
This
this
would
if
not have been a problem.
yeah it would have been an annoyance,
Yeah.
but you would have had, you know, the time of your leisure to go solve the issue
Yeah.
while a machine is turning a spindle, you know.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, I need to the X9 hasn't run anything but bevels, and I keep telling myself you should order a bunch of call it tool holders, because I can't run anything on it because I only have one tool holder for
So,
it.
dude,
So,
there you go. Just a backup set of tool holders. You have the option. Okay? I think that's a good takeaway from that.
That's for sure.
Dude, tying into this also, I'm second week with studio assistant, shop helper. What a difference it makes, man. I can't, like, day one, no training. made a difference.
That's fantastic.
It is, I don't know how I made it this far again.
It's an age-old adage, but basically, your success will be defined by how well you delegate. You know what I mean?
Dude.
That's like I've heard that from so many different angles, from so many different industries, and it's like that is so true. It's like
Yeah.
the top performers, like even you look at like the billionaires and stuff of the world, it's like they're some of the best delegators to ever exist. And
Yeah.
it's like that word I think about a lot.
I'm not a good delegator. I know this. You know what though? I'm not a good human delegator. I'm going to take that back and get, like, give myself a little bit of credit because like I actually have done a really good job overall of offloading certain types of process or earning potential. It's just I'm not like a it's never been employee based,
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah. More
And it,
collaborative.
yeah, it's more collaborative. And at the end of the day, when I look like at when Joe was here, we were so productive. Dude, I don't know how I made it the last 4 years or 3 years or whatever it was. I don't know why my brain didn't pick up on that. Like just maybe overload or learning or something like that. But it's like as soon as Isaiah hit the shop floor and I started giving him tasks, two things happened. One, I started to free up time, but I'm learning that like body doubling for me is huge. If I have someone in the shop, I'm more effective.
Oh yeah, same for me. Very
Like,
much the same for me.
that is crazy. Like, you just get more done. Like, I look and I'm
Yeah.
like, wow, we got a ton done. It's parallel.
Yeah, and for me it's one of the things it's like it's really easy to get distracted when you're just by yourself. Like I remember when I didn't have employees, it was like I'd be in the shop and it's like oh, I've been really meaning to change, run that airline, but I didn't because I didn't have a PEX elbow or I didn't have this.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, I'm gonna go get a coffee and go get that and go ahead and finish that. And it's like, it doesn't matter. You just turn the light off in the shop, you walk out the door, you go do something. Yeah, it's productive.
Right.
But whereas if you have someone that shows up and it's like, no, they're gonna start running the machine.
Yep.
And if you're not like doing whatever, you're not cutting material so they can run it, you're not, it's like, you feed off of each other in that you're not able to get distracted as easily, or at least I am
Yep.
not. So that's
You have
really nice.
accountability,
Exactly.
right? That is just that alone, man. It really, and it's very nice to hear that you struggle with that because I mean, dude, it's butterflies all day for me. I like, oh, okay. I do need to do that. And then, I mean, I can just go off the rails completely.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's a lot of times it's useful things or valuable, but it's not the valuable thing. It's not the consistent but boring thing that allows the business to do well. It's the interesting thing that needs done.
Yeah, exactly. Being careful about interesting things is a lifelong battle for me. And it's very at the forefront for me 'cause I'm still working on that old Jeep. And for 2 weeks it was parked in the shop because I was pulling the cylinder head and walking past it. It was honestly kind of bad. Like I don't like having projects like that in the industrial shop. I think
Right.
it's a bad plan. It worked fine, but still it's like it's very hard to think about. I'm gonna walk past it and go sharpen a bunch of knives when I knew all I needed to do was like finish this one little thing and then I could get it done and get it running. And it's like it's supposed to wait till after work, I need to sharpen knives, but it's like that pull is hard. So
This is the siren song.
yeah.
Like,
Ooh, we don't have any space to do that kind of stuff at our house. It's very tight. We do talk about someday getting into a place where I really would like to separate that stuff out, because I think that's a huge part of it is it's easy, like even when I was in the garage, even important stuff where it's like, oh man, I really need to mow the yard. If I wait till Friday or Saturday, it's going to be so long, it's going to suck. Like, I'm just going to mow it real quick before I get to work. Pretty soon, the mower doesn't start. Pretty soon, oh, it needs an oil change. Pretty, just everything.
It's always expanding. And that's the problem. I've had to kind of try and develop a framework for myself around it where I know that when I look at time or a task, I'm looking at the best version of it. So technically, yes, I can do it in this like amount of time I'm giving myself. We've talked about this. At this point, I double that time estimate, and a lot of times that's correct. And it's not because of the task itself. It's because of everything around the edges. Something goes wrong, you don't have the thing that you need. As we've been like dealing with this new property, it's the same thing. I'm like, I'm gonna go over and I'm gonna fix, the toilet or whatever it is. But it's like you run into another problem or it uncovers a problem. And so there's just a margin that you have to allow for that is it's consistent.
It's like the magician's handkerchief. You start pulling on it
Just
and it's
keep, man, it just keeps
just keeps
going.
coming.
Just keeps
But
going.
similar to that, one of the things I'm kind of leaning towards is I don't want anything wireless in our shop. Because I
Ooh.
yesterday, for like the third time, my Wi-Fi printer doesn't like the Wi-Fi connection. And I get to thinking, I'm like, why in the heck do I have a Wi-Fi printer? Like, this is
Totally.
stupid. And we were talking about the keyboard in the clean room is kind of not communicating that well, wireless keyboard. And I got to thinking, I'm like, I'm going to go on Amazon. I'm going to start ordering wired versions of everything. I'm never going to buy a wireless thing for the shop. I get the use case in like in your personal life for certain things, wireless headphones or whatever. But like in a manufacturing shop, like there should not be batteries. There should not be Wi-Fi. There
Dude,
should
I
not
love
be.
that.
And so it's just stuff like that. Cause to your point, it's like you, as your shop gets bigger, it's like, yeah, oh, I'll replace batteries. But yeah, when you're really busy and you need a AAA battery and you're really busy, you have stuff to do and you have to drive to the store because you don't have the right batteries. Like that is such a pain that is avoidable. And so I think I'm really starting to focus on that more of simple systems that are not serviceable. They just work.
Dude, that's probably like a key takeaway from this episode, I think. Like simple, dude, just simple systems. That like and understanding how a system operates within yours. And it's funny because so your issue with the Jeep was my primary like reason for pursuing a second shop. And it might sound ridiculous to look and be like, wait a minute. So you bought a shop so that you could have projects in your shop, your other shop. And the answer is yes, because just adding a level of efficiency to my current shop is creating problems because I have more need for layout inventory, you have different inspection processes. Like, meanwhile, I'm fixing my surface grinder and I'm adding a VFD to a milling machine and I'm doing a project with the kids. And those things don't go together. Add in an employee, and now it's like doubly so, right? And then I'm like, okay, I want to do a gunsmithing project over here. It doesn't, they don't go together. And so that thought of like the new shop becomes the Kihoku shop, and I can start from scratch and literally only add the things that we need to build product lines. That
I
to
think
me is huge.
that's critical. I honestly think that is a problem that's rampant in our friend group because, and it's not anybody's making flawed
No.
decisions. It's that everyone's has home shops, which gives you a default where any hobby that you have is going to overlap with what you're trying to do on a business side. And I think it's important. I think it's an important thing to note is that it's hard to notice that that's happening sometimes. But it is like hugely impactful because when we moved into this shop and we separated them for quite a while, for a year, I could feel the huge difference, like the weight off my shoulders. You go to work, you work. And having the Jeep in here was just a reminder of like, oh yeah, I remember what this was like. This is what it was like when I was working at home. You know what I mean?
And I should say too, this is not like these are not first order priorities. Like you and I are into our careers significantly. We are at a point where we can look at the way we work and make decisions on how we want to work also. Where do, I mean, it's this is, you know, I'm 22 years in, I now have my second shop. This is not like a first order priority,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. No,
And I
100%.
maintain that the home shop is one of the single biggest investments a maker can choose to pursue for success, because you are automatically reducing your overhead. The way that I
Yes.
have always looked at it is like our mortgage on current house and shop is comparable to what I would have paid for this much commercial space. Okay. So either I get my shop for free or I get a house for free. That's huge. And then I'm my own landlord. So I'm also that money that I would be spending on lease is going in. It's not always approachable. And like at a point, there's limitations. Like your situation is different. You need more space, right? You don't have the ability to build on your property a separate shop, but like, dude, it's valuable, right? That's the
And
thing.
it comes down to the constraint versus restraint
Yeah.
thing. It's like if you have a home shop, you're exercising total restraint that you're not going to do the wrong do things that are distracting, which is good. If you have like the fortitude and the focus and the ability to do that, that is awesome. But constraint always works better,
Works
which
better.
is that if you literally don't have the option to do the wrong thing, or you know, follow the wrong path or spend the wrong time or whatever. So it's there's levels. It's kind of like even inside of a home shop, I think maybe thinking about it in the constraint way would be wise, where it's like, you know, I do have a bot, I do have a bunch of gun stuff, or I have this or I have that. It's like it gets put away or something, covered, even
Covered.
literally just covered. I mean, little things like that I think are important.
Well, and you, the constraint side, you bring up a really good point there, which is the home shop provides a different type of constraint, which is space, power. Okay. So even if you were newer or you were gonna like make a go at going full time and you actually had deep pockets, you could still get yourself in a lot of trouble by buying a bunch of machinery that you didn't need, didn't know how to use, wasn't the right thing because you don't have the experience. Whereas if you're starting off in a home shop, that happens kind of organically, but you're limited. You can't buy five CNCs probably. Okay. So in like your case, you created a very functional, scalable system inside of a very tight space constraint. But if you had just tried to make a go of it from the outset in a commercial space, just the stressors would have been higher. You would have spent more no matter what.
Yeah, definitely.
You could have definitely been like, oh, I need this machinery instead of figuring out solutions. And that I think is like, I don't know, man. That's like a pretty prime. You just leveraged your growth was so fast that it was able to basically provide you that exit to where you went from small home shop to a large, essentially manufacturing facility in one step.
That
That's
was all luck.
crazy. Yeah, whatever.
Well,
That's a thing. I
I
mean,
mean, but yeah, it just keys in on constraints aren't always bad. Constraints are like, it's kind of necessity is the mother of invention. You know, it basically means the same thing. I think it's important to look at constraints and think about how that can actually benefit you, because it's easy. Like I know when I had a home shop, like in the very beginning, it's like, yeah, this will be the like an awesome multi-use, like totally a hobby. And I think I had to learn to not do that, I guess, you know. So it's,
Well, because your process dictated it, though. That's the thing. My process has never gotten organized enough that I really saw the downsides until this last year. because the way that I was making and the types of products and the volume of products, it really was more chaotic, more creative, more free flowing. Like now with some things being efficient, it starts to show all of those limitations, you know? Dude, it's pretty, this stuff is interesting, man.
It is
I say
psychology.
it is, and it's learning yourself and learning just in general. But like I say to the kids a lot of times, which is probably ridiculous, but like I talk about freedom through structure, which I'm sure they're going to grow up and be like, oh, my dad was always talking about freedom. Well, I don't know, fucking freedom through structure. But it's that you, like, I look at it in my life, my ability to be structured in certain areas is the thing that has created freedom in the areas that are really, really important to me. Somebody left a comment on, I posted another pencil making video yesterday, and someone left a comment that was basically like, my hope above hopes is that I have this type of free time in my life at some point. And I looked at it and I like didn't, it's like I almost was like, man, is that like a dig? Like, but then I realized I'm like, no, I've been working my entire life to be able to do that. The structure is what allows that, right? It's not freedom, but it's like freeing.
When you're focused on bringing in the bread, putting food on the table, that needs to be so effective and tight and efficient and square and like beginning and an ending to it that it does everything you need it to do, and then you can walk away from it for the weekend or for the Saturday or whatever it is. Whereas, yeah, that if it bleeds over and it's spread all over and you're working in and out of mornings and evenings, and then it's like you're doing, you have to then do things on the personal side during when you should be working and vice versa. And then that results in no freedom, which even though from a 10,000 foot view, that looks like freedom, because you're like, that dude's mowing his lawn on a Wednesday. You know what I mean? Like he can do whatever he wants. And that's like the perspective of a self-employed person is, like, holy cow, they can just go to the lake or whatever. But it's like, that's a trap. It's got the benefits that are there, but if you have no structure to your point, you will not go very far.
Well, and there's levels to it too. Like I look at it and I'm like, yeah, okay. Like to your point, you can make a decision to go do something midweek. But we also, you don't really get to leave at the end of the day. Like I look last night, I'm like, I haven't done it in a while. And I went in at like 9:30 at night. And I wake up at 4:30 in the morning, and I like my day is starts pretty fast. So it's a long day at work. I realized I was wired because I had been in this like problem solving thing. It's frustrating. I solved the problem. Then I got like a dopamine boost from solving the problem. But I realized I'm like, I've spent a lot of years where like that would have been like a semi-normal day. And with the boys, like I've really worked to not do that. Like I work to be out of the shop at a set time, to be flexible, like I don't want to miss anything. So it's like, yeah, the flexibility now is like I go to Taekwondo with Bo or Winston at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Still busy, but it's not in that like survival mindset either. Last night was that kind of hit of like, oh, I do remember what this is also like, Dude, we need to talk about the tariffs because there's some major, as much as I want to just like keep digging into that, we would be remiss to not touch on this.
This isn't a political podcast, so won't go there, but as far as the practical situation that we have in front of us,
Questions.
it is, the tariffs are an interesting situation. Man, I'll let you talk. I don't know exactly what to say.
I honestly don't either. This is a time I've been, it's really weird, man. I'm feeling like gratitude, fear, and like empathy, I think, right now.
It's a good way to put it.
Gratitude in that, like, our business has some flexibility in the way that we make things, the way it places, and on the Burnley side, like the where we source things, right? General, I guess, like maybe fear's not right, like apprehension, where it's just like you look and you're like, what does this actually affect? But specifically the knife industry, like I look at this and this affects a lot of our friends, right?
That's the main thing for me.
That's the one where like I just keep feeling this like kind of like what is this gonna do to the knife industry, right? And again, that's incredibly myopic, but it's who we know and it's our industry, so it's like it's really relevant.
Yeah, okay? For sure.
So how does it like right now? How does it affect the industry? Well, any brand that has import knives is currently looking at somewhere. It's moving. It's a moving target. We don't know, right? The last I checked, it was like an effective 125% tariff.
Yeah. And it appears like I guess we have to go there a little bit. It appears like basically a wrestling match. Where we're going to, like, in a sense, industry is going to have to wait it out a little bit to see. I really don't think that the 125% is a real number, that's right. Actually where it'll end up.
Totally.
But that doesn't answer the question of where will it end up. What I mean? So there's
a lot. Well, and we did go through, like, a 25% tariff and, like, a 10. I think another 10 in there somewhere. So, like, that when that happened, that was big.
Yeah. It's meaningful.
That was meaningful. Like the industry shuddered then.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this is from small scale to large scale manufacturers. This is merch for everybody. If you're having, buying a t-shirt blank from Asia or something. I think it is a good right now there. It's nebulous enough that it's a really good time to do it. Like a system check.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What?
Yeah, it's a wake up call.
It's a wake up call. Man. And like smaller brands, where if you're like a smaller brand and you're sourcing from, Riot or something like that, like this could be like a pretty major issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way you do. You mentioned, gratitude, and that I kind of lucked into really leaning into domestic and making our own stuff right around 3 years ago, which there was no design. It was just, I wanted to make knives. That's really, there's no dunking on anybody. Like I just want to make knives. So I make them. I live here. So that's where I make them.
Yeah.
And there's a gratitude that I feel for that. But like you just said, the empathy of like, it's the not knowing, I think that would be tough. I feel for folks out there.
It's an interesting time. It's easy. A lot of things, globally, it's easy to kind of like sequester yourself and be like, ah, like doesn't like, there's no direct effect. Like when it hits your doorstep, your dinner table, your mortgage, like it's just human nature to like notice those things. You can look at a wildfire and be like, ah, man, that sucks. If your house is up against that fire, you feel different. That's just how humans work.
Yep.
Right. So right now, I guess for us, like strategically, I am trying to look at this. I always try to see an option or an upside, a workaround that is just like I think the way my brain works. And also I don't panic, right? It's like stock market dropped. Like I don't usually make my decisions around like big changes.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I didn't buy a bunch of anything and I didn't sell anything.
Yeah.
I also just kept doing like my standard contributions.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel my like daily, my morning ritual. One of the things I do is like a little, like a gratitude journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually have like something that I'll write like as a daily reminder. And like for the last couple of months, it has been chop wood, carry water. Doesn't matter, man. Like, I have to keep doing
Yeah.
the things that I do every day to provide for like my family, my business, my friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of where I'm at is I try not to dig into this stuff too much because
Yeah.
the unknown is so massive here
Yeah.
that trying to tackle it with the limited information we have is unlikely. But I grant that I am in a spot of privilege to be able to do that in that we are making it here in
Totally.
our own shop. Yeah.
And again, man, it's always, this is not, it's not even about privilege. Like, that is, you nailed it, right? It's what you wanted to do. And so I always like inside of this industry, people kind of, there's a tendency to like kind of pigeonhole. Like you had started to go there almost like, right? Like, oh, like design, make, like, it's not that. You wanted to make the product that you wanted to make. There's not really any reason to like label it past that. Dude, I am like all over the place, right? Like, we do stuff made in China. I do stuff made in Italy. We do collaborate, you know, it's like we both collaborate with like CRKT. We both, we're not dogmatic in how we view, at least not to speak for you, but like, I'm not dogmatic in how I view like US made. Like, I'm not like flag waving that I make everything in the USA and this is the way that it's done. It's like I make things the way that I want to, and I make different things that I'm interested in. Like, so that all this is looking at that situation and realizing like there's some diversification plays, right? Man, so yeah, there's that. What else? This is the first time where I've started. I listen to the news every morning. I've started not.
Yeah, I've turned out to most of it quite a while ago, years ago, honestly.
That's good, man.
Yeah, it's I like reading about history,
Yeah.
and I am interested in like geopolitical conflict to an extent, but
Yeah.
when it comes to, basically when as soon as they start talking about the economy, that's where I kind of draw the line of like, yeah,
Yeah.
I can't control that. The only thing that's going to come of me learning about what's going on in the economy is stress and a very minimal amount of like benefit to me, if not a actual negative effect. So, I try to tune out from the economic stuff. Maybe that's a
Did
bad
you
plan, but.
man, I don't think it's like everything else, man. If there's an interest there, great. Did you grow up in a news listening, reading, watching household?
My dad is very, very, he reads. It's all reading, but
Okay.
we never watch like the news,
The
right?
news.
I don't
So
ever remember, but
I grew up in a household where my dad read the paper every day and also watched the news. And I have, there's like this general background noise of conflict and financial. And I remember how that would affect my dad and how, to some extent, like it had to affect decisions, at least at the table. And I look and I'm like, I actually don't do that with my boys because I'm, man, it's really hard to say. Like you'd said, you know, like we're privileged earlier and like we are, but, and at the same time, like, I guess that extends to me not like at this point with our resources as a country or whatever, I'm like, I got to figure it out on my own. Like the stock market crashes, I got to figure it out. I'm not going to like scream at the TV. I'm not going to tell my kids how everything's done. Like I can't do it. But I also realized I was internalizing a lot of it. And so I've just kind of like, I've started to like pull back a little.
And I like the phrase, it's like what happens in your house is way more important than what happens in the White House. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like it's our job to take care of ourselves. Always
Yeah.
been that. It's
Yeah.
always been that way.
Regardless of who's in office, agree, disagree, it's like you're not off the hook. All right.
So yeah, I kind of started it. I used to be a lot more into that stuff, I guess like college era and later, like I used to be more on all the headlines, you know what I
Right.
mean? And I don't think it was good for me. So
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think it's good for most people. I mean, some people, you know, if that's your job and stuff, and it's not like putting your head in the sand and ignoring everything is a good plan either. But
No.
you got to take care of yourself. 90% of your energy plus needs to be focused on what you can do and what's in front of you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that you have to have an eye to the periphery, but like there is a tendency for, some people to spend 80% of their worry and their effort and their problem solving on these macro things that it's like, that's not,
You
you
can't
can't
control
change
it.
it. Yeah.
You
Yeah.
can't change it.
Yeah. You got to kind of have it backwards, right? It's like spend 90% on what you can control.
It's funny, you and I, we were talking about houses recently, and I was talking with another friend too, and it's like, you look and you're like, interest rates are crazy high, right? For me, I look and I'm like, okay, if you can afford the house at the interest rate, like if you can make the payment and you need a house, it's probably a good time to buy. Like, that's how my brain puts it because I mean, there's no guarantees. And you look and you're like, in the 80s, like, you have 15% interest rates, right? But it's about if it works for you. It's like your solution. If you're constantly waiting for something else to get better or change, man, that's tricky. So yeah, like right now with tariffs, I'm like, I don't care, dude. It's gonna make an iPhone maybe really, really expensive. I can't worry about, like, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna worry about that. We're gonna figure out solutions around those things. Like it could have like obviously like huge. Is it the areas where you don't realize that it's an issue are an issue. Like what can you do about that? Can't do it. So it's
For
gonna be
sure.
interesting, man. But it's a good time, I think, to like check your battle plan and just like, okay, just kind of like look and see, like, okay, it's a fire drill. If
Roll with
nothing else,
punches. Yep,
you know, it was
punches are
like the
coming. Roll
TikTok
with.
ban, right? Like TikTok's banned. The next day it was back. Did any creators in that time period come up with a solution that was still valuable? Probably. And probably even more were like, that's not going to get banned. And they were probably both right.
Adapt and overcome.
Adapt and overcome.
So, yeah, that's a that's an interesting pool to wade into, I think, but
I know that
it's
one, it's so open-ended, man. And again, it's like really at this point, it's really hard to even talk about this stuff without someone politicizing it.
Yeah,
That's so it's
that's
like
kind of where I'm
you're
at.
limited almost, and like it just is what it is.
Yeah, and I've always looked at our business as, we're a knife making company, and knives aren't political. And knives are knives, they're tools for everybody, So that's kind of the tone that I always try to strike. And so it's
Yeah.
like, but sometimes like something like a tariff comes in, it's like, well,
You do, but that's the
it's
thing. It's like looking at that, it doesn't matter. Just like here's the tariff, here's the thing.
It's
Here's
a
what we're
foreign
looking
object.
at. And I think I had just finished, I can't remember if I had finished it last time we recorded, but I had finished the book on Bergmaster, right? And dude, it's interesting because like I'm reading that and it's in, they closed down in the 80s, but it's like interesting, like import export stuff. And you're like, there's parallels. And you're
It's
like,
always been a thing.
whoa, that's where the history side of this stuff is interesting, is because as a maker, it's easy to feel like you're in a bubble and like your issues are things that you are experiencing alone. And I've mentioned this, it's like you read books from the 1800s and it's a manufacturer and they're still experiencing the exact same things in the same growth trajectories and the same things with employees and the same things with automation. And your water wheel goes down, but you didn't have a second one. It's like,
Trade negotiations have been in existence since they were building things that could float, or
isn't
ever
that
forever.
wild?
I mean, you look at like, the American Revolution. It's like the Boston Tea Party. It was
Yeah.
about tariffs and things like that, so it's like, yeah, this isn't new.
Do you listen to, is it Dan Savage? The What is the history? Savage history or something like that. It's
I
weird
think
because
so.
it like popped into my head, but it's a half-formed thought. Okay, I'll just leave it alone because it's not there, but I'll find it for you because yeah, it's good. What else, dude? I feel like at this point our brains are starting to fizzle out.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that was a fun one. Talked
Do we
about
call it
machines. Yeah, I think we
machines?
call it machines, AI, and tariffs.
AI
Quite
tariffs.
the list.
That's quite the
Yeah.
list. Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. Let's wrap it.
Peace. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.